Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Jawanza for Life. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's another edition of Jawanza for Life, and I'm so excited to have this day the opportunity to come to you. It is Thanksgiving Eve, if you want to call it that, and this is going to be a very, very interesting show. It's going to be a very, very enlightening show. It's going to be a very, very touching show, and I just hope that everybody will sit through the show and to just relax, open your mind, open your heart to listen, to understand, because I have a very, very powerful, powerful guest who's going to be bringing a lot of information today. And again, it's only appropriate that on the eve of Thanksgiving, I'm going to have a guest on today who's going to talk about the day and the origins even of the day. And, you know, for those of you who never really knew what happened, you know, how that actually, you know, we were taught one thing in school as far as how did this day, Thanksgiving, come to be. We were taught about that, and there's a story that, you know, goes along with that. There's what we were told, and then there's what happened, okay? And my special guest is going to talk about what happened, okay? Now, my special guest today is, for over 30 years, she has been an activist involved in Native American land freedom of religion, land freedom of religion, and sacred site issues, indigenous and environmental rights. She is a member of the Chappaquiddick Band of the Wampanoag Nation of Massachusetts and was instrumental in reconstituting the Chappaquiddick people, monitoring reparation issues in respect to the Chappaquiddick, reviving the ceremonies and language. In 1996, I don't want to say her name yet, she traveled to England to research documents pertaining to the Chappaquiddick, Wampanoag, and in 1995, she was elected sachem, and that's chief, and served for 7 years. Since 2002, she has served as a spiritual leader for the Chappaquiddick people, and my special guest today, everyone, is the awesome Penny Gamble Williams, and I'm so excited to have the opportunity to sit and speak with her this afternoon. Penny, welcome to Jawanza for Life. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Kwekwe.
Akwani.
Yeah, it's good to be on your show.
How have you been? You've been wonderful?
I've been good. Been busy.
Good. I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, come on the air and speak with me about, you know, Thanksgiving and, you know, what you've been doing. And I'm really, you know, really very clear that there are a lot of people out here that when it comes to Native Americans, or indigenous people, that for whatever reason, it appears as though the whole, what's the word I'm looking for, the whole plight is almost like just disappeared. You know, I get the impression that there are people that feel that, you know, that their fight is over. You know what I mean? Not because they're no longer here, but just because you just don't hear. Every now and then you might hear some, you know, an issue with a team, a football team or a baseball team, and, you know, the Native Americans are, you know, protesting. But there's a lot more going on than just an occasional protest. And my special guest today, again, Penny Gamble Williams, has a long, long history. For over 30 years has been, you know, researching and bringing to light, bringing to our conscious awareness what's going on with Native peoples, bringing the history. She was host of The Talking Feather, very, very popular radio broadcast with her and her husband, Thunder. Penny, let's talk about Thanksgiving for a moment, because, again, tomorrow's Thanksgiving. It's a day that so many people come together to celebrate the just, you know, everything that they have to be thankful for. Now, we were taught in school that Thanksgiving was a day when pilgrims and indigenous peoples of this land came together for a feast where they had, you know, I guess, a feast of friendship, for lack of a better term. That's how it was presented. That, you know, after a long, hard winter, that the Native Americans who helped assist the pilgrims in making it through the winter, teaching them how to hunt, how to fish, how to stay warm, you know, how to, you know, I guess, survive. That they came together and had a feast, and it became known as Thanksgiving, the day that they come together to give thanks. Now, but there's a history behind that. And it's more than just, you know, eating turkey and, you know, being thankful for all of the things that God has done for you. The Chappaquiddick, I hope I'm saying that right. Are they from the Massachusetts region?
Yes, they're in Massachusetts. That's where my people are from on my mother's side. My father's from Alabama. So his people have Creek blood, Alabama Creek blood. And so I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, and used to travel to Chappaquiddick and Martha's Vineyard. Well, mainly Martha's Vineyard. We didn't really go to Chappaquiddick that much because of the circumstances with the land and just the feeling unwelcomed on that little island. That's a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say something before I get into where places sure. are located. We're talking about Massachusetts, first of all. We're
okay.
talking about the island of Martha's Vineyard and Chappaquiddick or Chappaquiddick Island, which means cut off land. So where do we begin with this story?
Okay.
Sometimes I think we have to really look at – remember – we just went through this whole thing with Columbus Day, and
right.
then it segues to Thanksgiving. So
mm-hmm.
October and November are pretty heavy times in terms of the historical relationships and the things that happened to the original peoples of Turtle Island, of this land. I mean,
mm-hmm.
a lot happened, and a lot of it has been carried generational, from generation to generation. We're talking about really horrible things that happened
mm-hmm.
that can't be erased or denied or shoved under sand. I mean, these are the things that happened, you know, complete annihilation sometimes of small groups of indigenous peoples on some of the Caribbean islands where some had to escape and go to other islands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, loss of land, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Family and relationships, a language, you know, a way of being, all of these things. So, you know, the North America, which is endowed with an abundant and complex culture, civilizations, that's what we had here. People had a way of living in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
With the environment. The land dictated how people lived. So the plants that were grown, some of the plants that were cultivated, the food that was eaten, the animals that were hunted, the fish that got caught, how the children were raised. I mean, there was, you know, there was a rhythm to life.
Right.
So when you look at how, you know, there was populations of approximately 15 million people in different parts of the Americas. You had advanced systems, you know, throughout these different societies. So when Columbus came, you know, he basically unleashed 500-year-long cycle of a European conquest, genocide, you know,
mm-hmm.
colonization
mm-hmm.
Of this land. And we're all really in this. It always amazes me that people tend to separate themselves from that history and look at it as in the past. But the
right.
past has followed us to the present. And if we don't do something about certain things, you know, this will be our legacy in the future. So, you know, we have to look at what happened in history. So when you start talking about, you know, how people feel about Thanksgiving or how people feel about Columbus, you know, it brings up a lot of emotions. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to deal with.
And you know what? I think that when you make a comparison between, because of course there are different things that have happened to different cultures throughout history. You have, of course, the African slave trade. You have, of course, the Holocaust with the Jews, the almost total annihilation of the people of Turtle Island, the indigenous people of Turtle Island. But when you look at the Native American situation, it's a bit different than the African situation and the Jewish, because this was your land. And to have a group of invaders come in your land and to take the land. Now, with Africa, I'm not minimizing the slave trade or anything that happened as a result of that, but they came in, they took slaves out, brought them to the United States.
They took Africans out who had a life,
yes,
who were very vital to their communities. They weren't, most people weren't enslaved in Africa. Yeah,
Right.
Right, because they, they were taken from their land and brought here and enslaved on this land. And in South America, you know, Brazil, I guess, imported so many Africans and people from other islands. So, yeah, it was brutal.
But I can imagine that for the Native American, though, because of what transpired here on their land. Again,
right.
You had sacred burials, sacred burial grounds, sacred, you know, holy places, and, you know, so forth, and to just see on your land, it's like somebody coming in your house and enslaving
right.
you in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And now, where you used to have access to the whole house, now you're in the basement, or half of the basement, a corner of the basement, you know, and saying, okay, this is where you live now. Or the closet.
You have a corner.
Okay.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I can imagine that just the emotional, that added to the pain that they felt, you know, just being
right.
stripped of their land, not only because, again, with Africans, we were stripped of our name, we were stripped of our culture, we were stripped of that, but, you know, it wasn't done to us. We weren't enslaved in Africa. You know what I mean? I guess I'm trying to say that it seems like there must have been an additional feeling of hurt to have been enslaved on your own land, or to be not only, because there were some Indians, I'm sure, or Native Americans that they tried to make slaves out of.
Well, they did. They were enslaved in the South. Definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There was a lot of, as a matter of fact, slavery was very... as they say, alive and well throughout the South, in Georgia, parts of Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. There were, people who came from those areas who were enslaved on their own land. And so when you complicated that with the African slave trade, what happened is Africans were being brought here on this land, you know, in South America and throughout, the East Coast, to be enslaved. They were stolen people on stolen land.
Mm.
So in the South, you had tribal people from, let's say, the Tuscarora Nation. They were enslaved. And some of them were sent to Europe, you know, some of the Tuscarora, and they were even sent to Africa. There were a lot of Native people who were sent to that part of the world. A lot of people don't know that. As these white slave traders were in Africa, and there was just this thirst to enslave more and more people. So, sure, Indians, yeah, send them over here too.
Wow. You know, it's got to be just so, I would imagine that forgiveness has got to be one of the biggest lessons, I guess, for a lot of people who have undergone, you know, just such a traumatic experience, the descendants of people who actually, you know, are now even, you know, being born on reservations, you know,
right.
And having to hear stories of, you know, this used to be our land. You know, that where we are now, this, all of this used to be ours, you know, and it's got to be very a very strong lesson in forgiveness, because it's when somebody does something to you and then they stop and you now are faced with, okay, you know, this is an opportunity to forgive. Somebody wronged me, I can forgive them, but that's because they stopped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But if you are constantly, you know, if no measures are being taken to rectify the wrong, and my next question would be, how could that wrong be rectified? If there was an opportunity for, if there was a council put together and, you know, white people today, you know, said, listen, we know that we weren't born when this happened. It wasn't us, but it was our ancestors, but we want to make it right.
Well, there are people that are doing that, and there are circles of forgiveness, circles of healing with white people who are trying to rectify some of the wrongs that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this sometimes it doesn't always work. There's a lot to excavate, you know, to bring out and to bring, you know, throw these things out on the table and examine them, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really horrible. They're horrible things. I mean, when you think about what's going on now in Palestine, you know, what's happening between Israel and Palestine and Syria and Iraq and Pakistan, you know, invasions, that European invasions, you know, people who have bought into that Western construct to, you know, to continue this invasion and suppress and you know, just dishonor people. I mean, this still goes on today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same practice. When you look at the news and you read about what's going on with different people, it reminds me of what happened to Africans and what happened to you know, the indigenous people here.
Mm.
So,
you know, it's just
the practice. It's evil.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
This is true.
I don't know how else to put it. And so what we are doing now in the 21st century, a lot of indigenous peoples throughout the Americas are really working hard to heal.
Well, I guess that for people who might not know, again, let's say you take some, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who just, as you mentioned earlier, just don't know what happened, or even why, you know, people still wondering why black folks are still talking about slavery. Come on, get over it, you know.
So, I know, reparations, and a lot of people look at Native people on reservations where there's like 78, 80, 90% unemployment, and they say, oh, pull yourselves up by your moccasins. Come on, get a job. I mean, really, there's an attitude out here that will blow your mind, because people just don't understand the complexities and the things that go on a daily basis on a reservation. I mean, it's hard. You know, and then people say, oh, these drunken Indians, you know, it's just drinking and drugging, and, you know, there's such dysfunction. Well, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? And why does it continue to happen for many people? And it's not all Native people. So, we can't lump, it's not a monolithic situation where you can say, oh, all American Indians are suffering. A lot of people are suffering. A lot of people are trying to get a grip and figure out how did I get here? And you know, why is my life so messed up? And why am I feeling like this? Why am I depressed? Why do I want to kill myself? Mm-hmm. You've got children as young as 5 wanting to kill themselves, and many of them do. 5, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, you know, on up in some situations because of the situation, the daily life with some families on a reservation. You have housing issues. You have health issues.
Mm-hmm.
You have educational issues. Now, with all of these things, there are groups of indigenous members of the many nations who want to go back to a certain point to where they can say, okay, this sustained us when we were quote-unquote free. These are the things that got passed down, the medicines, the ceremonies, mm-hmm. a way of being. How can we incorporate these things? So with many different nations, they're looking at the food. Okay, how can we go back to eating the food that was indigenous to us?
Okay.
You know, depending on where the people live. So in the coastal areas, you have fishing, you have river people, you have ocean people, you have woodland people,
mm-hmm.
You know, relied on different animals and wild berries and nuts and wild fruits. So there are a lot of people who are looking at, okay, what was our diet like and how can we go back to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, when the federal government decided that the only way that they were going to gain control was to create reservations. And as the railroad, you know, kept pushing west and more ranchers and farmers, white farmers and ranchers, needed more land, and they were leaving the East Coast and moving, you know, towards the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
and in the Midwest and you know, all the other areas that they wanted to populate. So, I mean, what does that mean? What is that going to mean for all these different nations? Well, that meant that they had to move. They had to be removed from the land that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who were more nomadic, like maybe the Lakota and some of the other Western and Plains people, that meant that they had to be put somewhere and stay there. You know, they couldn't they couldn't hunt the buffalo anymore. They couldn't hunt the elk like they used to. They couldn't gather the wild berries on the plains and eat in the manner and live in the manner that they had lived for hundreds, thousands of years. So reservations were created, lands set aside. And that changed everything. That meant that the government provided food. They provided material for clothing. They provided all these different things for the people to survive,
mm-hmm.
in order for them to survive. And it really didn't work for everybody. I know I'm probably skipping back, but I'm going to stay kind of on what happened as these reservations were created. As time went on, the different commodities, canned goods and things that were created and set aside in mass for reservation life. You had lard, you had canned powdered milk, you had canned beef.
Sound like welfare.
Spam. You had all kinds of things that were high in sodium. You had flour. You had sugar. You had powdered drinks and canned orange juice, and everything was canned or packaged in that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No real fresh produce on a regular basis. You know, occasionally oranges, apples, you know, it depended. So now you have people who used to eat from the land and eat well, you know, fresh water, you know, teas, making different teas, gathering the medicines that they needed. Now they're stuck on this land. And once a month, you have the commodity vans come and stock up, and people come, and they get, according to how many people that are in their family, they get their commodities. And they go home, and they cook, and they eat,
mm-hmm.
and develop different ailments and diseases, you know, gout and diabetes, heart disease, cancer, obesity. I mean, you know, I could go on and on and on. So you have several generations of people who were healthy people, you know, vital, strong, had a way of life, to now it's eroding into a whole different way of having to live and to be.
Well, you know what? I believe that part of the problem when it comes to getting other people to sympathize, and I'm sure the Native people aren't just want sympathy, but you know,
no.
But I think when it comes to other people not looking at it and you know, jumping behind it and even wanting to research it and find out more and how can they help, or I think part of it is because of the way that the media has portrayed Native peoples over the years. I think that when the average person thinks of a Native American or indigenous person, they think of someone, if it's a man, they think of someone, a man in a loincloth, maybe a leather or, you know, some cloth around his loins, you know, maybe some, you know, he might be barefoot, you know, he might have a headdress.
He's got the moccasins on and the beads and,
exactly.
and the long headdress, and so everybody associates that look with this is what an Indian looks like, and the woman has to look this way. So you have the Hollywood image,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they created this. And by the way, in the early days, most of the people who played those roles were not even Indian. Very
mm-hmm.
very few were, and if they were in the movie, they were extras.
Well, I think that's part of the hindrance when it comes to people looking at it, just because they've been ingrained with these images. The average person out here probably has never met a full-blooded Native person. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, let's you know, this whole thing about full blood and all of that. I mean, I understand what you're saying,
okay.
but you know, there's a whole political piece about you know, the original people.
Okay.
You have in different parts of the country, different reservations, where there might be people who carry more of the blood of the original people than maybe in other tribes, because of the people who were there, who settled within, you know, their surrounding areas, and who intermarried with whom. So, you know, right now that's very political with many tribal nations.
Okay.
Who's full blood, who's, you know, it really divides people.
Okay.
It really divides people. I mean, I just wanted to share that with you, you know, because when you use the term full blood,
right,
it,
I think
it
it's important.
Conjures up a lot of things, but I understand what you mean. Like you were to go to Brazil and if you were to go to the rainforest where there are indigenous peoples who live there who haven't had much or maybe any contact,
mm-hmm.
then you would possibly see people who are full blood.
Right. Yeah, and that was the point, yeah. was that the because we don't see that often, then I think it desensitizes people. Whereas, for example, Trayvon Martin, you know, that whole situation that took place with the young boy. Now, because a lot of black people, They've seen him. They live in the same house with him. You know, they're like, oh, he was like us. He was one of us. But if, let's say, for example, some Native American person, something had happened with a Native American person, because we don't see them on a daily basis, I think part of it, that might be part of the reason why, you know, they don't have a problem, or I won't say don't have a problem with it, but might not rally around it, for example, or even with the team, the Washington team, the football team, you know, because if we were to see indigenous people of this land, it would be easier to rally around, you know, a cause where you see the people that are being affected.
Well, you know what, there's a something interesting about what you're saying. You know, this whole issue of, well, we don't really see Native Americans or American Indians or however, whatever term people want to use, on television very much, very seldom. I think there is a Native American actor, I think, in that series, Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some on some of the soap operas. But, I mean, to turn on a program and to see a series like you would see an African American television show, where there's a series of, mm-hmm. you know, comedies,
mm-hmm.
and comedians, and, you know, even a drama, you're
right.
not going to see a lot of Native people. So, I mean, I think there's a reason behind that.
Guilt, maybe?
If we were to see more and more Native programming on television, then that would conjure up all kinds of questions. And people would be looking at the government and maybe states and wondering, well, why is this policy enacted? I mean, why are these things being said or not being done on the reservations? You know, there'd probably be a lot of whys.
Correct.
You know, and what about the land? And and on and on and on, because, see, land has been the biggest issue when it comes to talking about Native nations.
Okay.
I mean, from the very beginning, what did the English come here for? Land
mm-hmm.
and commodities, you know, minerals and gold.
Right.
And that's what mm-hmm. the crown sent, you know, they formed these corporations or companies like the New England Company and the Virginia Company and the mercantile groups that handled, you know, the finances and Queen Isabella, who sent Columbus off to, you know, conquer, bring back the spoils of the new land.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was about land and resources.
Okay.
Which bring in revenue. And with all of that, what do you do with the people who are the original people
mm-hmm.
of the land? You have to get rid of them. You have to desensitize people. You have to look at the original people as the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So
standing,
you know,
in the way of progress.
Standing mm-hmm. in the way of progress. So, you know, it's very schizophrenic, because I believe that there are a lot of wonderful. There are a lot of talented writers, Native American writers. I mean, I have a friend who is a playwright, and his name is William Yellowrobe, and he wrote Grandchildren of the Buffalo. That's not the right title, but you know, I'll give you the right title in a minute. I mean, everybody should know about him. He should be play should be on Broadway. I mean, they have run here in Washington, D.C., and in New York, and in Connecticut, and in Rhode Island, you know, where he gets the money, the grant or whatever, to put the play on, and it doesn't run for very long. And when it does run, it gets good reviews. And he has a lot of other plays. He's a writer. He writes books. He writes poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, another friend, Waleem, Morgan Peters. He's Mashpee Wampanoag. He's a writer. He's a playwright. He's a poet. He's a musician. More and more people are starting to hear about him. But his plays should be, you know, a lot of people should know about the works that he has created. So, but what happens when you have people like these talented artists? The whole issue comes up. People have to decide, do we really want that story out there? Do we really want to bring their story to the attention of the whole U.S.?
You know, and with that, they might not, and from my understanding is Native Americans are a very proud people. They're not, there's certain roles they're not going to play. They're not going to be the buffoon, you know, they're, you know, not to say they don't have their comedians and stuff, but I remember a few years back, the R&B artist or rapper or whatever you want to call him, Andre, formerly of, what's
yeah,
the name of
it? Andre 3000.
Yes, with Outkast. They had put out a song, and it was called Shake It Like a Something. I don't know, Shake It Like a Washing Machine or a Roller Coaster or something. They was talking, but the thing, the talk, the point of it was Shake It. And they had, he performed live at some, I don't know if it was the Grammy Awards or some awards ceremony.
Yeah,
and
he
had women dressed up, dancers dressed up in Native garb, you know, shaking it. Okay, now, supposedly some Native groups got offended, you know, and basically said, listen, we're not going to stand back idly and let you portray our women like that, although they weren't Native women. They weren't Native women. They were actually African-American women dressed up in Native garb with the, you know, short skirts and the, you know, beads and everything. But Native people took offense, you know, like, you know, I got the impression, I could hear them saying, look, I don't know how you portray your women, okay, but you're not going to even pretend to be an Indian or a Native American.
Well, he has Indian ancestry. That's an interesting thing, too.
What was that? What was that
part? Andre 3000, he does have Native American ancestry.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And you know what? I can see that. I can see, just now that you mentioned that, I can see that by looking at him, it appears that I can see that the high cheekbones, and I can see that. But yeah, it was interesting to me that even after all of these years, that the pride, you know, was still with the Native Americans to even protest, you know, to even voice a displeasure with the way that their women were, or it wasn't, again, the dancers weren't Native, they were black, just had on Native outfits, but they didn't even appreciate that. You know, it was just like, you know, and I thought I was kind of pleasantly, you know what I mean? I was glad that they stood up for that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you and I talked about that when all that went down, you know, in our radio days over Radio 1. But, you know, this isn't new, and these protests are not new. It's just that the newspapers don't pick up all the things that different organizations are doing, you know, to bring attention to a lot of the situations and circumstances that Native people find themselves in, and I mean, it's like there's so many different issues out here, and that a lot of people say, oh, you know, why are you worrying about that? It's entertainment. But if you're not getting a lot of, if people don't see Native people often, you're not getting any airtime on a regular basis. You don't get to really discuss, you know, how you feel about these things. You know, people are going to look at that and say, hey, that, you know, yeah, you know, shake it like an Indian or whatever. So a lot of people did say, you know, enough of this. We want to sit down and talk with Andre 3000.
Right.
I don't think it ever happened. I know a lot of letters went out to, you know, the people that were handling him at the time. And I don't know whether he ever addressed any of it. You know, it kind of got quiet. but there were a lot of Native actors and performers and Native American organizations that said, you know, we want to bring this to the attention of the entertainment industry. And, oh, by the way, how come there are no Native people performing at the Grammys or the American Music Awards?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then there was a point, I believe, in the mid-90s where the Grammy Awards actually had a category for Native American music. So, you know, there were different things that happened before the Andre 3000 issue,
right,
and other initiatives that took place. For instance, another friend, Sonny Skyhawk, is an actor, a writer, producer, and an activist. And he sat down with Kwesi and Fume, who was, I think, then the head of the NAACP.
Okay.
And somebody from the Latino Actors Organization and Asian Actor Entertainers Organization. And so these entities got together and said, look, we want to be seen in movies, in the whole entertainment industry, before mm-hmm. In front of the camera and behind the camera. We want these same opportunities.
Right.
And for the African American part of this, I think what the NAACP was saying at the time is, we want to be able to have our movies shown, not the buffoonery,
mm-hmm.
but to have real, meaningful stories. You know, more of them.
Right.
I mean, because you had Sounder, and you had a lot. You know, there were several movies out that had a different storyline than, you know, some of the other mm-hmm. movies that were produced. And this is all people wanted. And then Asian people didn't want to be slotted in the same roles. They wanted to expand their roles. And
they got tired of the karate flicks. Like, we can do more than
that. Right, they do more than that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Native people just said, you know, we just want to be in a movie.
Right.
Besides Dances right. with Wolves, you know.
Right.
I mean, give us some roles. We have mm-hmm. writers. We can... We have movies that we can, you know, we can get the cast. We can do it all. Well, you know, several entities decided that they would take it on. I think NBC, ABC, and CBS, they worked in conjunction with an entertainment a Native American entertainment company, I believe, out of New York, upstate New York, which was part of one of the Six Nations tribes that started negotiating,
mm-hmm.
along with Sonny Skyhawk, negotiating with NBC, ABC, and CBS, and I think Fox and, you know, some of the cable channels, to have these showcases where Native people could, you know, come on the stage or show one of their films and see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they wanted, was at least see what we can do.
You know, I guess when it comes to those people who make those decisions, I'm sure they're looking at the public and who's gonna support this. You know, like, for example, in the African-American community, yes, Sounder was a big hit. I remember Sounder. I saw it when I was a little boy. But
yeah.
Today, I wonder if a movie like Sounder today, when you have the Tyler Perrys and the Madeas and, the, you know, all of this kind of stuff, it's like, what would moviegoers go buy, pay their money to go see? You know, so today, if a
but
Sounder
that's been
would
been manipulated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, there's an assumption that people just aren't going to go out and see that. But, you know, I mean, there's been a little mind control going on. So you have all this violence. You have all this sex. you have all these different things and you know, buffoonery and crazy comedies. And, you know, people want to go to a movie and they want to, you know, they want to, you know, kind of get out of their daily grind and just be entertained. And maybe not learn, but just to be, you know, want to laugh. I want to get scared, you know, with the horror movies and all this vampire stuff and zombie stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what does that mean? We're all being desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
Some entity has made a decision that, oh, they're not gonna watch that. They're not gonna want that. Well, how do they know?
Well, I think part
this
of what you're saying.
This is what they want people to see.
Well, I think part of it is that people don't want to be reminded, and I think just the native features are very strong. You know, very very regal, very royal. You can look at a native. You can pick a native out of a crowd. You know what I mean?
Because let's go back to something. I know what you're trying to say, but anybody who's listening, you know, you don't want to put that stereotype out. Have you been to the National Museum of the American Indian and seen that floor, the third floor where they have about 80 photos of Native people?
I have not, but it sounds like I missed it, huh? It could be somebody, you might think a white person, you might think a person's white and they're Native, huh?
Yeah, I'm up on that wall. So,
okay.
You know, people come there and they see a woman with, you know, fuller features with locks, and that throws a lot of people off, you know, especially, you know, European people. All kinds of people look at it. And there are other people who are very, you know, dark that are on that wall with sharp features, and then you have people who look like they're more Asian, look like they're more European, and then somebody who has the classical Native American look. You have people with light hair, with dark hair, with curly hair, with, you know, wavy hair. So what they wanted to do at the National Museum of the American Indian is, like, make you think when you look at that wall, what does an Indian look like? And then there's another wall as you come into that particular space. I think it's called Our World, where there's a video playing, and as you're walking, there are lots of different, you know, Native people in the video that are about the size of, you know, I mean, they have it, so it's you know, regular size. It's not like a little mm-hmm. film. And you're actually looking at people as they walk down a street, and you say, wow, okay. You know, you have somebody with feathers, or you
mm-hmm.
have somebody who might be mistaken for an Asian, or you know, somebody from, another part of the Americas. So it's like there's not this classical look for everybody. So what does an Indian look like?
Well,
and that's
then,
where we are today. That's, you know, in the 21st century, this is kind of what is happening.
Well, do you have people, because I know back in, you know, when I was younger, and even today it might even happen, where you have people that were black that were light-skinned enough and had enough European-looking features that they could actually pass for white. And they did, intentionally, because they felt like their life would be better if they were thought to be white than it would if they were thought to be black.
Right.
Do you have that amongst the Native people? Do you have people who actually have enough European features that they intentionally pass for white? Because what brought that thought to mind was we were talking about the movies, and the argument could be made by those executives that, well, there are Native Americans out there in the movies. You just don't know they're Native, you know, based on, like, what you just said concerning the wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
there are a lot of actors who have Native ancestry, and they have many different looks. So, I know Cher, who was Armenian, European, with some Cherokee blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they gave her a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when she talked about that. There are just a lot of different people. Some people say Johnny Depp has Native ancestry. I know he's been adopted into the Comanche tribe.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. because of his role in the Lone Ranger or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, as a matter of fact, you can go on the internet and there's a list of African and American actors, musicians, and whatnot that have Native blood, that know of who their, you know, people are. I mean, it's a whole list.
Everybody that's listening, my special guest today is Penny Gamble Williams. She is a member of the Chappaquiddick Band of the Wampanoag Nation of Massachusetts, and I'm just very, very honored to have her as my special guest today on Jawanza for Life. Sister Penny, I'd like to ask you, getting back to the reservations for a moment, you know, a lot of times people hear that the Native Americans in this country were just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed until they just couldn't be pushed any further and just, okay, well, we got to put them somewhere. Let's put them on a reservation. Many Native Americans today are born, raised on the reservation. Personally, I've never been on a reservation, so I don't know what the life or the quality of life is on a reservation. But is a reservation such that you can go and come as you please? I mean, if you're a Native American, if you were born on a reservation, can you just leave anytime you want to and just come back anytime you want to? I mean, there are no...
Yes, you have family there, but you're not going to receive some of the benefits if you leave. There are so many different aspects of reservation life.
Mm-hmm.
The way things were set up, creating a government or a particular way to run a government on a reservation, because reservations have their own governments.
Okay.
Their own courts, their own police, you know, their own fire department.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of reservations, not all, but
now with the reservations, were they, because, and I don't know, and pardon my ignorance, okay, but you had different tribes, you had different people, you had, like you mentioned, several different tribes. You had the Cheyenne, the Apache, the, you know, the different, the Hopi, the Wampanoag, I mean, different tribes of people. And but did they set up different reservations for different tribes, or was it just like, okay, well, everybody, you know, I don't care where you're from, you know, what tribe you're from, you're all going on the same reservation?
Well, I mean, that kind of happened when Andrew Jackson was elected, and in 1832, he pursued that policy of removing Native people from, you know, good land in the South, you know, Georgia, the Carolinas, and whatnot. And he Oklahoma was now called Indian Territory, and so
mm-hmm.
for several years, different tribes from those areas were marched. They had to walk. Occasionally, somebody had a carriage, you know, a wagon or whatever. But so many of them were marched to Oklahoma from the South.
Wow!
During bad weather, many of them died along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And about 4,000 people died on that journey. And you had the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw. They were marched.
Mm. You know, I think that sometimes people, we can get so caught up in our own day-to-day living and trying to make a living and, you know, so forth, that it's so easy to, you know, forget. We need to be reminded, you know, just about the horrors of, you know, things that actually took place. Because, again, if it were to take place with us, and I'm speaking of African Americans, we've had our own history, we've had our own, you know, struggles with slavery and so forth, but we cannot forget that the Native American, the indigenous people of this land, were friends to the Africans when they were here. You know, when they were run away, many were taken into bands or groups or families of Native people, sheltered, hid, you know, fed, you know, all of these things. And for now, for us as African Americans to take no interest in what these people did. Matter of fact, I'd even go as far as saying some of us might not even be here were it not for the, you know, maybe a Native person saving, by their help, aiding in saving the lives of our ancestors, not to even mention the mixed blood, you know, that we share, you know, just so for people to not look at this as, for us to look at it and say, oh, that's their issue. No, it's a human issue. It's our issue. You know, it's an issue of everybody, for everybody on the planet, because what affects one affects the whole if we're all a part of the whole, correct?
That's right. That's the whole thing, Juwanza. You just hit it right on the head there. We forget that we are all connected and we are all related. And the way this Western construct operates, we are, you know, we're made to be divided and mm-hmm. to not think of the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the forked tongue kind of conversation that goes on and these
yeah.
things we hear about. Yes, America is wonderful and we, you know, we all work together, you know, one nation
mm-hmm.
under God
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and yet there are people who are suffering. We come together when there's a tragedy or storms or
mm-hmm. That's right.
earthquakes and whatnot for the most part. You know, sometimes the government's just not there for a lot of us, and we just pitch in and do the best we can. But on a daily basis, when everything seems to be relatively, you know,
that's right,
everybody's kind of back into their own little world, and that's why I said earlier, you know, we've been desensitized. We've been taught to not really think about others in that way, especially if they're different. I mean, if you're not Baptist, if you're not
mm-hmm.
Catholic, or
mm-hmm.
oh, if you're a Muslim, oh my God! And, you know, if you're a Jew, or if you,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're all so divided up. And oh, and if you're American Indian, that's usually the last one,
mm-hmm.
if it's
mm-hmm.
even mentioned at all. I think.
That's got to be something just to even be totally left out of the conversation. I mean, that's got to be a hurtful kind of thing just to have a conversation and then for you all to not even be mentioned in the conversation. It's like, oh, by the way, oh, yeah, you know what? I almost forgot the Native American, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just been the story for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But the indigenous voices are being heard on many levels, and you know, there might be people with their ears blocked, but the dialogue is out there for anybody to hear and to join in the dialogue to see what kind
of Sister Penny, I want to thank
it.
You. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I just want to thank you for all of the many years you've been doing this for over 30 years. You know, that's a long time, and I'm sure that you've seen some progress. I'm sure it's not been enough, but because of your efforts even, I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there, just because I know you had the talking feather and, you know, you are very constant in spreading the news about what's going on in Native American land, Native American country.
Right,
and,
right.
I mean, just to be in a position where you're actually bringing people together, you know, and you've been doing that for a long time and
right.
heard of people that I never would have even known about, you know, just by listening to your radio show.
Well, we're, you know, Thunder and I, my husband Thunder and I, we'll be back up and on the air soon. An announcement will be made
okay. And
we'll be on Blog Talk Radio. So
awesome.
Our archive shows are still up.
Good.
Go to blogtalkradio.com/talkingfeather, and you can get more information about some of the things that we're doing with our organization, OHKE, O-H-K-E, culturalnetwork.org. So you can, you know, catch us there, and Penny Gamble Williams, you know, well, just Google me. I can't even remember.
You said something's going to come up.
I so appreciate the opportunity. I know we really didn't get to talk fully about Thanksgiving, but you know what? I think this was an important dialogue that we had, a conversation,
yes.
Which took us many places.
Absolutely.
And people can come to their own terms about how they're going to celebrate Thanksgiving. So,
and I'm glad that it turned out the way that it did. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes. Wunish, Katabatash, thank you.
Thank you, Sister Penny. One more time, could you please give so people who want to tune in and go back to, they heard this show and they want to, you say, oh, wow, there's a talking feather out there. Can you please give that address to people if they want to go back and listen to the archives until it comes back on?
www.blogtalkradio.com/talkingfeather.
Sister Penny, it's been truly a pleasure. Please give my regards to Brother Thunder.
I will.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I miss you. I mean, just having this conversation and speaking yesterday brought back memories. It is truly, truly an honor to be your friend. And I thank you for the work that you and your husband have been doing. You've been doing it well. Please keep up the good work. The planet
Definitely.
Is a better place because you're here. Thank you.
Okay. And you do the same. And my best to Yvette.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
She smiled.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Talk to you later.
Aquani.
Aquani.